This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. If you've been to the grocery store in the last week, you may have faced what looked like an alarming sight. Empty shelves, bottled water, eggs, milk, all gone. And it's not just your local grocery store. Stores across the country have sold out of the basics because worried Americans are stocking up. Well, the message from city and state officials is, don't worry, there's plenty of food. The pandemic that's rattled nearly every corner of the economy has forced the food industry to adjust to greater demand and to new risks. So how are they continuing to get the essentials from the farm to the store? And what does keeping us fed mean for the workers who are essential to that supply line? Joining us today from his home in Olney, Maryland is Doug Baker. He's the Vice President of Industry Relations for FMI. They used to be called the Food Marketing Institute. Now they're the Food Industry Association. Doug, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us from her home in Washington, D.C. is Catherine Boudreau. She's a food and agriculture reporter for Politico. Catherine, great to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, Catherine, lots of regular functions of the economy are frozen right now, of course. What's going on in the food supply?
Well, one of the major reasons why COVID-19 has disrupted our food supply chain is because prior to the outbreak, Americans were really all about convenience culture. So, I mean, since 2010, we have been dining out at restaurants more than we eat at home. And what's primarily driving that growth was young people who are going to fast food chains like a McDonald's or Chick-fil-A, and also, you know, so-called fast casual restaurants like Sweetgreen, Panera Bread, or Chipotle. So manufacturers over time had changed their products to accommodate that in their supply chains. For instance, like think of chicken wings. I mean, poultry companies ramped up production of chicken wings because, you know, we're going out to restaurants and ordering chicken wings. But that's not something you typically cook at home on your own. So, I mean, what does that mean for manufacturers now that people are self-isolating because of the coronavirus? I mean, all of a sudden, there's just huge demand for more supermarket-ready products rather than restaurant-ready foods like chicken breast, pork chop, smaller packages of salad greens to serve individuals and families. So the portion sizes and packaging is different. The trucking routes are different, so they're having to shift production.
So what's behind the continuing sort of, you know, I go to my grocery store, there is food there for sure. It's not a run on the store the way it was maybe in the first day or two of bad news. But some shelves are still empty. Is that just because demand spiked so much that they haven't been able to backfill the stock yet? What's going on with those empty shelves now?
Yes, that's absolutely right. It's just disruptions in the supply chain. But I think, you know, you're seeing that within a few days that these stores' shelves are being restocked. And I'm constantly hearing from the farm groups that I'm talking to, as well as representatives of the grocery retailers that, you know, the food is on its way. We're not running low. I think, you know, obviously Americans are thinking, is there enough food in the food chain? And the answer is yes.
Today, we're going to hear from a lot of the people who keep the food supply chain working. I want to start with Scott. I spoke to Scott yesterday. He's a regional sales and delivery manager in Maryland for a company that makes tortillas. And I started by asking how his job has changed since the coronavirus pandemic began.
Basically, the demand is just so high that the rush to the surge to the grocery stores have basically just caused about 400% increase in sales, running out of product, and, you know, it's just kind of hard to keep up.
Wow, 400% increase. I mean, people just making a run on tortillas, it's what they want around right now?
Well, it's not just tortillas, it's everything. The water aisle, I mean, is blown out. You know, all the paper products are gone, bread. Companies can't keep up, and, you know, we're running into supply issues now where I have product that is supposed to be available to me at the warehouse right now that is currently 5 days late. So I have run out of items to sell to these grocery stores.
Now, what has the company done in terms of its product lines to try and meet demand? How are they adjusting?
Oh yeah, so it's easier for them to produce just a few items so they can produce more product for everybody. So they've really limited like our menu basically. So we're starting to see a decrease in like health items and everything being produced to us. So they are just providing us now with core items, all the big selling items, basically.
So that's to say maybe you had a line of, I don't know, 12 or 14 different items, different styles of tortillas, and now it's narrowed down to increased production for the basics?
Yeah, so we have like closer to 30 products, and we are down to about 15.
Okay.
And the stuff that they cut first was like all the gluten-free stuff, the carb stuff. So we're kind of seeing that they're going to like eliminate the healthier options or the diet-specific options first.
Yes, the market segmentation is temporarily a thing of the past. So what about health measures and protection? How have things changed for you visiting all these places? I know everybody's keeping their distance, but grocery stores are crowded places, although they're necessary. How's that part of life changed for you?
Well, I'm washing my hands a lot, so much to the point my hands are starting to dry out. I just recently was able to get some gloves that fit, like some disposable type gloves, and keeping hand sanitizer, trying my best to keep my distance from people, especially customers. It's pretty unsettling to know that, you know, when you're out in public, especially in these grocery stores where it seems like everybody in the world is gone the past week, that like you're kind of depending on other people to be responsible, and to make sure that their hands are washed and that they have hand sanitizer and aren't coming out when they're sick, because it's something that I can't avoid. I have to go to work, and I work in these grocery stores. So a lot of my well-being right now relies on the responsibility of others too.
Well, Scott, I have to say, I mean, one of the things that this pandemic has done is kind of expose for us the people who work every day who maybe we don't spend a ton of time thinking about on your average Wednesday afternoon, the people keeping the grocery stores stocked. And now it's become obvious how critical you all really are.
Oh, yeah. Actually, like before all of this, I was dealing with like my internal struggle of like feeling like my job wasn't very meaningful. And, you know, everybody wants to feel like they're helping and contributing in some way. And I kind of felt like I didn't have that. But since the COVID-19 has happened, I kind of feel like I feel necessary, you know what I mean? And when I go to work, I do feel some sense of fulfillment. And, you know, I also feel like I'm making sacrifices for other people. And it kind of has like brought some meaning to my day job. And, you know, that feels good kind of in a weird way, you know. It's like it feels like, oh my God, like people need me, you know.
Well, we do need you, Scott, and I want you to know that you're appreciated.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
That was my conversation with Scott, who sells and delivers tortillas to grocery stores in Maryland. We've been hearing from many, many of you around the industry, your family and friends. Anne writes, my daughter works at Aldi. She's been going in at 5 a.m. to unload the trucks that arrive before opening time. She gets the shelves fully stocked, even with toilet paper, by the time the store opens, but then the crowds arrive and she says it's wiped out by noon. Betsy tweets, I'm a grocery store worker and I'm pleading with people, please stop paying with cash. It's dirty on the best of days. It's potentially deadly during a worldwide pandemic. And David writes, I feel like I'm in a dream or living in a different world when people say not to worry about grocery stores having product. Here where I live, in the Finger Lakes region of New York, many grocery shelves are still mostly empty. There's no toilet paper to be found anywhere. The food and other products for the household are in very short supply. Where are those fully stocked store shelves where I live? Well, David, we're going to get that question answered. We're going to talk a lot more about the supply chain that gets the food from the factory to the table. Doug Baker is here from the Food Industry Association. Doug, hang in there. He'll have a lot to say. We're also going to talk about something that Catherine mentioned, which is that Americans eat out a lot in different kinds of restaurants, and the food industry was busy supplying those restaurants. So how have they retooled all of their trucks and packaging and products so that it's not going to the places where we won't eat it, so that it comes to your kitchen? Stick with us. I'm Todd Zwillich. It's 1A from WAMU and NPR. Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
The coronavirus pandemic is changing everything really fast. So we have created a podcast where you can hear conversations and stories from NPR journalists who are covering the pandemic, the public health fight against it, and how the world is coping. I'm your host, Kelly McEvers. Listen and subscribe to Coronavirus Daily from NPR.
It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about America's food supply during this coronavirus pandemic with Politico's food and agriculture reporter Catherine Boudreau and Doug Baker, vice president for industry relations at FMI. They're the Food Industry Association. Here's a message that one of you left in our inbox about the workers at grocery stores and other places who've been deemed essential to continue working, even as so many of the rest of us stay home.
I'm Donna from Indianapolis. We should be considering how suddenly millions of people who suffer society's contempt and harsh poverty-inducing exploitation are now deemed essential workers to be overworked till they collapse from exhaustion or the virus. We better remember their 24/7 value when this is over and pay them their fair share of our nation's prosperity.
Well, thanks for that message, Donna. We appreciate it. Sue says this, and we've been getting a lot of comments along these lines. People are not hearing the words, the stores will be open during times when they're supposed to stay at home. Grocery stores are open, but the problem is that those people who are trying to stay at home and use delivery can't get all they need. And Ricky agrees with this, saying, can you please discuss the need for grocery stores to close their doors to in-person shopping? The spread of the virus will continue unless essential businesses become curbside pickup only. And there we're talking about the safety of these people who we now know are essential workers in our grocery stores. Doug Baker, you've been patient. Sorry for keeping you hanging just for a few minutes. I wanted to make sure we got to our tortilla delivery driver first. But Doug Baker from the Food Industry Association, one thing that Scott mentioned about his tortilla deliveries, Doug, was a 400% spike in demand over the last couple of weeks. You take the broad view of the industry. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, we're seeing that pretty broadly across the entire country and across many categories. Other categories are seeing similar increases. Obviously, hand sanitizer for the last few weeks has seen a 400% increase. And I know people are going, well, how's that possible? Because I can't even see it on the shelf. But if you think about what we typically, you know, I had a bottle of hand sanitizer that sat on my desk and I used it more in the last 2 weeks than I probably used it in the last 2 years. So, you know, as those products become important, those sales spikes continue to happen. So we are seeing that across the board.
So, Catherine, I want to talk about hoarding for just 1 second. The Attorney General from the White House yesterday said, you know, if you've got a bunch of product or toilet paper at home, you're not going to get a knock on the door. If you've got a warehouse and you're hoarding masks or products that people need, the Justice Department is going to look at you. Most of us are not in that latter category, but we want to be good citizens. What level of buying is appropriate? You know, buying in bulk is understandable. On the other hand, we never want to send a message of panic. And if you buy enough toilet paper or tortillas for 18 months and stick it in your pantry room, that means somebody else can't get to it.
Yeah. I've been hearing from administration officials that about a week or two of groceries is good and the warnings not to hoard. They're urging people not to hoard. And I'm just wondering, Doug, is that what you're urging as well?
Yeah, we're absolutely messaging that consumers should be looking for 7 to 14 days worth of inventory to, and understanding that we have the stores are not closing and we also have an e-commerce platform that is also working. They can get those essentials that they need if they find themselves in a situation they need to get more.
Well, I want to make sure we talk about safety as well. Safety for people who work in the food supply chain. Joshua is a package delivery driver. He says package delivery is long days as it is. But with the increase of online ordering, our days are even longer. If a driver gets infected but shows no symptoms and delivers packages all across Michigan, that infected driver may well infect hundreds of healthy homes. Catherine, how are stores and companies that you're reporting on thinking through safety for their drivers, their handlers, people who have to handle the packaging? It's essential, but we also need to protect their safety.
Yeah, I think companies are barring visitors from their plants. I think they're checking workers' temperatures and asking truck drivers to stay in their vehicles when they're making deliveries or pickups. I know Cargill is stationing workers farther apart or shredding employees across multiple shifts. So that's kind of what I'm hearing from companies. And also, I think that there's, for instance, I talked to a distributor in Nogales, Arizona. He brings in product from Mexico, a lot of fresh produce, distributes it up and down the West Coast and up into Canada. And he's saying he's urging his employees not to take lunch breaks together, and he's spacing them out in their warehouses. And again, just making sure everyone is washing their hands. But of course, this is difficult. And I think what really struck out to me too, the first guest was about how you're really relying on the due diligence of other people as well. You're just hoping everybody is, again, washing their hands and taking precautions and not coming to work if they're sick. But of course, some of these essential workers who we are now relying on so critically aren't always eligible for paid sick leave. I know that some states are changing that, but I think it really puts into perspective the benefits that the workers in our surface economy have.
We heard from one listener who works in the grocery store at the cash register pleading with people, please don't use cash if you can avoid it. Dermot tweets, why are supermarkets not issuing their staff with masks and gloves, especially the checkout personnel? They can't stay 6 feet away from their customers. Now, Doug, Stop and Shop announced on Thursday a 10% pay raise for 70,000 employees, 2 weeks of paid sick leave. Walmart has announced bonuses for employees. Is this happening across the industry? Is it a hiring binge now for the food business?
Yeah, there's a lot of retailers. Pretty much any retailer, you walk in the store and you're about going to get hired on the spot. Instacart today just announced that they're looking to hire over 100,000 drivers, simply because, you know, more people will be shopping online and those days do get longer. So it allows them to reduce the route size and duration of the time that their drivers need to be out to try and make sure that they stay healthy as well. So it is an opportunity. And unfortunately, with other sectors being asked to close down or reduce hours or in-store dining, we encourage everybody to reach out to their local grocer if they feel comfortable in continuing to get employment.
Now, Catherine, this sounds like an industry desperate to not only take on personnel, but retain the people that they have with all of these incentives. What are you seeing across the industry?
Yeah, I mean, their grocery stores across the country are hiring hundreds of thousands of workers. And the Homeland Security Department has designated the food and agriculture industry as critical infrastructure. And I think that's to streamline guidance across states to make sure that these employees continue to go to work if possible, and that they're not subjected to like curfews or gathering restrictions that the CDC has put out. So Walmart, for example, they're the largest employer in the country. They're going to hire 150,000 additional employees, or they're in that process at their retail stores and their warehouses, and that's going to be ongoing through the end of May. Kroger, a big grocery retailer, is hiring, I think, 10,000 people across its stores and distribution centers. And then with that, I mean, that I have seen quite a few companies step up and offer increased wages and sick leave, like Safeway and Stop and Shop. I think those two chains negotiated terms with their workers union, the United Food and Commercial Workers. And Walmart said that employees who contract the virus will receive up to 2 weeks of pay. And then after that, hourly associates who aren't able to return to work could be eligible for up to 26 weeks in pay. Hmm. One thing that I also thought was interesting is that some state governors, and this includes Minnesota and Vermont, is that they're classifying grocery store employees as emergency workers, and that triggered childcare benefits, because you think about these workers who have children at home because schools are closed. What do they – they're essential workers, but what do they do for childcare? So I thought that that was a good development in Minnesota and Vermont.
Now, talking about workers at every level of the food business here, here's another voicemail that one of you left for us.
My name is Kenji. I'm a truck driver, so I'm calling from America, somewhere out here along the roads. And I just wanted to be sure that everybody knows that when the truckers start getting sick from this COVID-19, that store shelves are going to start to empty out very quick. So please keep in mind that the truckers need to stay healthy and safe to make sure everybody can get the products that they need.
Doug, there's no doubt that what Kenji says is true. People at every level of the supply chain have to stay healthy and safe so that we can stay healthy and safe. But think about the life of a truck driver. I mean, if you're barreling down the interstate, the truck stops where you stop to eat and take a shower, those might be closed.
Yeah, that's actually happening. And we appreciate the truck drivers and have been working with the Truck Driving Association to ensure that they don't have any disruptions in their day. But we are seeing, and we've worked really closely with federal and state governments to get those truck stops reopened. We've also worked very closely with the National Restaurant Association on drive-thrus, right? You can't fit that big rig through a drive-thru, so can they make accommodations for those drivers as they pull into their parking lots to be able to accommodate them and get them the food that they need? We appreciate those drivers, and what he says is very important. The good thing, if there's any benefit out of a bad, we've also created a partnership with the International Food Distributors Association, and as that sector continues to see sales decline, we're now redeploying those resources, mm-hmm. and we're partnering with that industry on trucks and equipment,
all right.
and drivers,
all right,
and
hold
product
that.
And capacity.
Doug, hold that thought. We're going to talk a lot more about how the industry is retooling. Doug Baker is here. Catherine Boudreau is here as well. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
Hey parents, Mindy here from Wow in the World, NPR's podcast for all ages. With schools out, we are all looking for fun ways to educate and entertain our kids. Wow in the World has over 100 science-filled, screen-free episodes to help them laugh and learn. It's like a cartoon for their brains. Wow in the World from Tinkercast and NPR.
We're talking about the strength of America's food supply chain and how it's adjusting to the new reality that we live in during the coronavirus pandemic. We better talk about the source. We better talk about the very beginning of the supply chain. Listen to this.
Hi, it's Alan from Southwest Wisconsin. I'm a farmer. The thing that the news media hasn't picked up is the potential for planting delays. This is a potential debacle that dwarfs what we're talking about because we would shortly potentially run short of food.
Catherine, Alan knows his business. He's a farmer in Wisconsin. He's concerned about his own supply chains, I'm sure. Fertilizer, all the things he needs to run his farm, his own workers. He says there could be planting delays.
Yes, I think one of the major threats down the pike is that the U.S. for at least a decade has not had enough farm workers to harvest all the food that we grow. This is particularly acute in the Southeast in states like Florida and Georgia, as well as in California, where strawberries or bell peppers and other products are picked by hand. Dairy farms also use a lot of migrant labor. They require 24-hour workers to keep eye on the cows. So basically, without comprehensive immigration reform by Congress, farmers have increasingly relied on this program called H-2A. It's a seasonal agricultural worker program, and it's primarily migrants from Mexico who come throughout the year temporarily for a few months. And these visas have increased by 11% just over the last year, or from 2018 to 2019. And this is more than 258,000 jobs across the country. But the U.S. has closed embassies in Mexico, and that staff helps process these H-2A applications. And in some cases, they can require in-person interviews. So farm groups here in Washington have been raising the alarm to the Trump administration saying, look, we need these farm laborers. Can we consider them for emergency visas? And right now, the guidance that I guess has coming out from the State Department and the Agriculture Department is that workers who have previously come to the U.S. under H-2A and don't require in-person interviews will be allowed to return and be prioritized. But at this point, it's unclear to me how many workers that applies to, how many of those more than 258,000 workers will be able to come back into the United States.
Yeah,
this
more essential people to the food that we eat every day. Catherine, you're sort of talking about the back and forth in the Trump administration about these essential migrant workers. In the meantime, of course, over all of this is coronavirus, and this is not a time when the Trump administration, if ever, is shining any positive light on migrants. talking about closing the borders, whispers of closing borders with Mexico for other political considerations. All of this stuff interacts, Catherine. Visas are one thing. Are we going to have the workers we need?
I think that's an open question at this point. Right now, it's to be determined. I mean, quarter two, quarter three is when the most of these workers come into the country. So I think this is something I'm going to be checking in on with all of the farm groups here in D.C. and those out in the country who rely on these workers. You can't have delays in your worker and the workers that you get because this is a perishable product we're talking about. If you don't harvest it when it's ripe, you know, it's going to go bad. So I think that right now this is an open question of now, if you have enough workers.
I had a conversation just yesterday with Monica Gonzalez. She works at Monterey Mushrooms, which is a mushroom farm in California. She and her coworkers are working. They're having difficulty. They're worried. I started by asking Monica how she and her coworkers feel about continuing to go to work every day during a pandemic.
A little bit scared, but not too much. The only thing, the children's not going to school right now. So the big problem from them is who takes care of the kids. So, and the other thing is, you know, we have people in contract for another companies outside. They don't have a paper, so how pay the rent or pay they sick? They pay. They're not giving nothing. So I'm very concerned about these illegal people. You know,
I mean, a lot of the labor on these farms, of course, is performed by undocumented immigrants, and what you're saying is that it's difficult, it's impossible for them to access benefits or even be able to know if they have a job waiting if they have to stay home.
Exactly. Yeah.
Doug, Monica identified two other potential problems that could affect our food supply. Lack of daycare for kids who no longer have school, their parents are working on the farm, and the fear of undocumented workers. We talked about visas, but there are thousands and thousands of undocumented workers that are essential to our food supply. I think we all understand that. They can't access social services at all if they lose hours or if they get sent home. What is your industry doing in this regard? Are you working on this?
One of the things that we have done is working with other association partners. We have a coalition, and we've actually taken some language. If you guys have described it beautifully, that this industry has a lot of arms and legs. And we need to make sure that not one of those arms or legs gets cut off in the process of trying to mitigate this virus. And so what we've been spending time doing is going through the entire supply chain and helping to identify and define where those different arms and legs come from and how they support the industry so that as the federal government and state governments start making these proclamations identify what's essential and what is not essential, that we have a better opportunity of making sure that none of those areas are negatively impacted. So that's the one area that the retail industry is focused on, is just trying to support that.
Well, part of the food supply, look, we talk about the chain from the farm to the store to aisle 7. Where the bread aisle is. But what about imports, Catherine? A lot of the products that people enjoy and they buy, they come from other countries. Italy, you know, you buy lots of imports of wine and cheese and pasta, among other things. What's the status of the import business right now?
Right now, I think so far, so good. That's the latest. I've primarily spoken to people who run businesses, cross-border businesses between Mexico and the United States, because the U.S. imports nearly half of its fresh fruits and vegetables from Mexico. I mean, of the $26 billion worth of agricultural goods shipped across the southern border, more than $13 billion of that is produce. So as of last week, I talked to Jaime Chamberlain. He's the president of a distributing company in Nogales, Arizona. He told me that everything is moving smoothly, and he didn't expect goods to stop flowing across the border. But that's just the state of things right now. That could obviously change, but we'll see. At this point, I think this is things are flowing.
Yeah. Well, we've been getting, as you can imagine, lots of comments and questions from listeners about the products they need at the store. Mike says, my wife only eats gluten-free. I found it easy to restock as no one wants to buy the more expensive gluten-free items. But we've heard from other listeners as well, Doug, with specialty food concerns, especially if they have health concerns, who say they've been having a little bit of trouble finding the products they need. Is that because of what you mentioned before, that a lot of producers are moving away from the specialty items and focusing on the basics?
I think a lot of it also has to do with demand. I myself went to the grocery store and found myself buying brands that I had never purchased before, right? So I think, asking the public to have some flexibility and some patience, and maybe they'll not get their favorite brand or their favorite flavor or scent, but there will be something in that category that's available to them, is also getting people to buy things that they typically wouldn't buy. I want to say that I think the Non-GMO Project has well over 35,000 items that they've certified as gluten-free. And that's a very good point. If people aren't celiac or gluten intolerant, then they typically wouldn't buy that. But for other areas, if it's like a low sodium claim or something like that, well, if I can't get the regular, then I'm probably willing to eat the low sodium for the time being until I can get the other stuff back in stock.
Yeah. Well, we got to let everyone go because we're just about out of time. I just want to repeat real quickly the opportunity that we've learned about today for employment in the food supply chain. A lot of people out there work in restaurants, work in places that are shut down. Walmart has announced plans to hire 150,000 people. Amazon, 100,000. We listed a bunch of other. Instacart, bunch of other companies. Real opportunities out there, if you're listening, might be a great place to go. Catherine Boudreau, food and agriculture reporter from Politico, and Doug Baker from the Food Industry Association. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we take off, time for today's act of kindness. Ever since this health crisis here in America kicked in, you've been sharing with us and with the entire country some moments of kindness and generosity in your lives. Today's story is from Erin in Delray Beach, Florida.
My good friend Tori and her boyfriend decided to foster a dog because a lot of the shelters in the area need fosters right now. So they went to the same place where they had adopted their puppy 1 year ago and met a dog or two, and their puppy wasn't really getting along with it. And all of a sudden the shelter staff realized that they recognized their puppy that they had adopted a year ago, and they told my friend Tori that her mother was still languishing in the shelter. Tori and her boyfriend brought her home on the spot. So now mother and daughter are reunited, and this mama puppy, who's been in the shelter for the past year and probably the other years of her life, is now in a safe home, and it just is amazing.
It really is amazing. Love to hear it. Erin, thank you for sharing that with us. Every day, we're spotlighting a different act of kindness. So tell us yours. What acts of kindness, empathy, solidarity have you seen in recent days? It can be big. It can be small. It can be about the outbreak or nothing to do with it at all. Just let us know. Tell us your story, 855-236-1212. You can also leave us a message on our free app, 1A Vox Pop. We want to know what acts of kindness you've seen in your neck of the woods. The number is 855-236-1212. This conversation was produced by Avery Kleinman and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU. It's part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us. This is 1A.